Yay, United Way. Good evening, Council Members, Mayor Matthews. My name is Esther Greenberg. I'm the Chair of the Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women. I just wanted to reiterate our vision statement and our purpose statement, and it is to end sexual assault, sexual harassment, and domestic violence in the City of Santa Cruz through prevention, programs, and public policy. To make ending violence against women the highest priority in Santa Cruz County. And the reason why I reiterate those two statements is this includes homeless women as well. On February 9th, 2016, the Santa Cruz Sentinel reported that, quote, a 53-year-old homeless woman was found slumped over and lifeless in a Santa Cruz park, which was Garfield Park, on Friday afternoon. The cause of death was unknown at the time, but we can guess that her death was due to a deterioration of her physical and mental well-being. The other day, a colleague of mine, who is an RN in one of our community hospitals, shared her experience recently caring for a homeless woman who was kicked so hard in the side by her partner that her spleen ruptured and she had to be rushed to emergency surgery. These are just two examples of what life and death is like for homeless women in our community. I come to you today to communicate how important sleep is to a person's mental and physical health, in addition to how important it is to be able to sleep safely. And some of those impacts were reiterated or said earlier today. For a homeless woman, it is not safe to sleep. Their rate of experiencing violence and sexual assault is close to 80% and increases to 97% for those with mental illnesses, according to the National Sexual Violence Resource Center and the National Resource Center on Domestic Violence. Some of the adverse outcomes of having no safe place to sleep is not being able to sleep at all. Sleep deprivation is a form of abuse which leads or will increase mental and physical health. Women who choose partners as a means of physical protection only to be assaulted by them. Or these women will choose public spaces to sleep to have some sense of security, but at the risk of being ticketed. In a 4-to-1 vote taken on March 2nd, the Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women agreed to support the amendment proposed by Council Member Lane. In 2015, the Santa Cruz Continuum Care application funding the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development documented that only 18 emergency shelter beds are dedicated to domestic violence, victims of domestic violence. Ooh, I'm running out of time. There were 23 individuals that, okay, thank you, indicated that they were homeless due to family and domestic violence. So the question is, where do the other 5 women go and possibly their families? I do have a little bit more to say, but I know that my time is up, so thank you.
Hi, I'm Becky Johnson. If you're writing 2,400 citations for sleeping in the city of Santa Cruz in a year, that's a tremendous amount of police resources going to that. And for every citation written, there's several move-alongs that where a person is not cited but just disturbed from their sleep and moved and told to go somewhere else. All of these result in sleep deprivation. Sleep deprivation is an irreparable offense. You cannot repair robbing a person of their sleep. It's worse than stealing. Because if you steal from someone, you could potentially pay them back someday. But you can never pay a person back for the hours of sleep you stole from them under color of law by sending your police out because you're so afraid of homeless people in your midst. Homeless people, we looked, the 2000 census, I think this is the last time this question was asked, they said, how many homeless were born here? It was 25%. 25% of our homeless in the city of Santa Cruz were born in the city of Santa Cruz. And yet you treat them as though they're a pariah, a force that must be swept out of town. It's unconscionable. And now you're, now HUD's breathing down your neck. The Department of Justice is. Lawsuits are in the wings. And you want to make this. But now you want to make sleeping bags illegal? Just that hypothermia. Yeah, you'll hang on to the hypothermia. Let them sleep, but let them freeze to death. Thanks.
Coming this way.
My time's already going off and I haven't started.
Which one? Use that one
this
right
one?
There that your hand is on.
I really don't need one, but I'll use it anyway. Can you reset? It keeps going off. I mean, it's down to 142.
The city clerk will do that.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. I'm actually here on a positive note. I am one of the persons that the city housed. I was dying. I need a breathing machine to sleep at night, and I was dying. And you guys, through the city housing authority, and it was last year, so I don't know who exactly the members were, but thank you. And also in that time, I became a comedian. So I'm going to give you a little bit right now because I started my hook here. I wrapped it last year, and I'm going to do it now. And there's no bad words in it, so don't worry. You can't kill me. You can't kill me. You can't kill me, witches. You can't put me in your ditches. You're too big for your britches. You can't kill me. You can't kill me. I can't breathe, but what does that mean? Stop 72 times a night. Can't use a machine. You can't kill me. You can't kill me. So come on, take up the fight, because no weapon formed against me shall prosper. And I can't die and go to a grave. Love one another. That's a wrap. So I finished that one, and I have a whole lot more. And I just want to say thanks, because I do represent the family side of the homeless and the disabled. So, hey, and keep up the good work. I know you're going to do something really good for tomorrow or whenever you vote on this. Because, like they were saying, well, you guys are talking about other different people out in the streets, but you're not, like, the families. It's the families and the disabled and the people that cannot come up here and speak that you're actually doing something good for. Thank you for advocating. We appreciate it, and I love Santa Cruz. Bye.
Madam Mayor, members of the council, good evening. My name is Enrique Ortiz. I'm a longtime 22-year resident here in Santa Cruz. I am now the caretaker of the property of the Orthodox Church, just kitty corner from here. I read a sign just out front and on the tent on the awning that would make everything really peachy clean regarding respecting the property where people do sleep, for example, on the porch of the church. But I'm the one who washes down the urine on the side of the church. I'm the one who cleans up and picks up the debris that the people leave. And the list can go on. This afternoon, early this morning, there was a woman bare-breasted sunning herself on the east side of the church, lying on the asphalt pavement. I asked her to please not do that, and or she should leave. She gets pissed off at me. Okay, so I realize there's a lot of emotion going on here, and I feel a bit of trepidation in coming up and speaking on behalf of the church and the parishioners who do not like what's going on, because I have in the past been assaulted by a homeless person numerous times asking him to move along. If the guidelines for sleeping in public places or where they're not permitted or allowed by the owners of the property, as, for example, the Orthodox Church, if the guidelines could be followed, there'd be no problem, I think. Everybody knows that sleeping is all right, yes, but also a basic need. Thank you.
The American meeting. Evening, everybody else. My name's Linda. I've been homeless. I have several comments. I'm going to try to cram into one sentence for you. I want to remind you, or some of you maybe haven't heard about, a young man, his name was Eddie Hicks, Jr., who was in Santa Cruz, got stuck here because his mother was very ill, similar to the chronic problems I have. And when he turned 18, he went to jail for something like 14 camping ban tickets. I'm sorry, I can't guarantee my memory on the numbers, but he wanted to resolve them, and that was the only best way he could figure out how to pay his duty to society so he could start as his own young adult person out from under his folks with a clean slate. But within 3 years, he was dead from living on our streets. And that was some years ago, and there are a lot less places you can tuck yourself in, daytime or night, a lot less places you can buy or just trespass to lay down day or night than there were when our streets killed this young man. There could have been other factors, but what I saw was very real, too. So I hope you take out the sleep word. It's a really basic, and I hope that you are then led by your own compassion to develop real models of alternative housing. I understand housing now, and I support it entirely, but it's our community's responsibility to make sure that we understand we're dealing with a public emergency, and there need to be emergency accommodations for people's bodies while more and more people are flooding into homelessness. And I also wanted to say, along with compassion, one of the missing elements, I think, is engagement. As Mitch Snyder said long ago, we need to actually relate to people and remember they're human. We all have some more learning and work to do. I think Don Lane has been an inspiration to trying to get into this enough to at least make sense and move it forward. Thank you.
Hello. Hello. My name is Sophie Polyhernakis. I'm the vice president of the parish council of the Prophet Elias Greek Church, which is right across the street from here and the one that Enrique just talked about. We are very acutely aware of the homeless issue in Santa Cruz. In the last year, our church has had a dramatic increase of the people that are sleeping on our porch, that are camping on our porch, that are spending their days on the porch, that are taking shelter on our porch. And the issues that come along with that have also increased 100-fold. The ordinance that is in discussion this evening really doesn't affect us directly because we are a private entity, and as such, we can continue to contact the police department and deal with the issues that we have with people camping on our porches and on our lots as needed. What I am here tonight to say is that our church would like to see a different situation to handle the homeless situation, and so we are asking that the City Council of Santa Cruz take their time in deciding this amendment and perhaps craft some more viable options to this very real and human problem. We believe that this ordinance simply ignores the real issues of what's going on in the streets and what the needs of the people who are homeless are, and it may even create bigger problems that we have as a community to deal with. The solution doesn't address the real issue of mental illness, of serious drug abuse, what the homeless experience. It doesn't deal with food, sanitation, facilities, storage, personal belongings, or safety. What I do want to say is that what our church would really like to do is participate with any groups that are part of the city council, that are part of the county, that are part of the citizens, to try to come up with some different solutions to try to help these people get off the streets rather than try to get them safely sleeping on them. Thank you.
Excuse me, sir, for just a sec. I want to take another read on how many people would like to speak. Okay, good. Well, we'll finish the speakers, and then I think we'll take a break. Short break. Thank you.
My name is Paul Seaver. My associations are with the Trinity Presbyterian Church and with the Association of Faith Communities, Jim Weller already spoke for them. I'm speaking on my own behalf. First, I want to thank you, Mayor Matthews, for allowing and encouraging this tremendous outpouring of thought. We have worked in the Association of Faith Communities now, as you know, for 4 years with the faith community shelter, and we've been sheltering around 20 people every night now for quite some time. What we've learned is that two things, really. One is that there is an unbelievable amount of goodwill in this community that can be put to use and to work and to help on this problem. And the other thing we've learned is that if we are to make progress, we have to engage the people who are in need and use the resources within that group of people to help themselves. We were forced to do that because we could not possibly have run our shelter if we did it on any other basis than help getting the people in the shelter to build a community so they can help themselves and take care of themselves in many ways. So my point is, let's be positive. There are many wonderful solutions that are possible when we can work together on both sides. Thank you.
Hello. I just have a couple of questions or observations. Question number one, I think from the standpoint of, the homeowners and residents and renters, we want to know more about how this is going to protect the neighborhood. Don Lane talked about that earlier, but it seemed that we were speaking in generalities. We want to make sure that the streets aren't going to be flooded with new cars and cars that just end up staying there forever. That's a real fear of people. And the other question that I have is, how can this seemingly, real need be coordinated with the other jurisdictions? You've got Scotts Valley, you've got Watsonville, and it's not going to do any good if Santa Cruz does, it seems to me, Santa Cruz does something completely on its own. And, I mean, how does Scotts Valley deal with this? How does Watsonville deal with it? Is there any kind of coordination that can happen between the jurisdictions so that the need is looked at more globally, at least countywide? To finish, again, making sure that the public understands how the neighborhoods are going to be affected by this one way or the other, because I think there's real anxiety, about how, those of us who live kind of near the beach have seen the RVs on our streets that just seem to stay forever, and we don't want to see that increase. And it needs to be dealt with humanely. I agree with that. But there's another side to it. Thank you.
Mayor Matthews, City Council members, my name is Jeff Ringgold. I have historically opposed repealing the camping ban outright as a reckless approach, and I still do. I have historically supported strong public safety policies, and I continue to do so. Yet I rise tonight to support these amendments because with the transition from policies that address camping to policies that address sleeping, you cross a very important practical, legal, and moral line from legitimate governmental objectives that you're trying to meet to full frontal assault on human needs and human rights. That is not something that the City Council can continue to do and still maintain the integrity of our city government, of our legal system, and how we treat one another as human beings. Now, I have a very different approach to political activity than some of the people who hold signs behind me. But some of those signs are correct. Sleep deprivation is, in fact, a form of torture. It's recognized as such. Gratuitously subjecting people to hypothermia is a form of torture. I don't believe that's the intention of anybody on the City Council, but that is, in fact, what your laws are doing. That is not an appropriate approach. I encourage you to support these amendments. Thank you.
Good evening. I'm Scott Graham. Back was 27 years ago, we had an earthquake in this town, and it made a lot of people homeless. They opened up the Civic Center and let people stay there. And eventually, all the housed people that were staying there got places to stay, and it ended up with a bunch of homeless people there. And that eventually turned into the Homeless Services Center. And regrettably, the Homeless Services Center now has a fence around it, and they keep homeless people out. Another issue is that there's a lot of the homeless. There's a significant number of homeless people that are mentally ill, and a number of those people are on Social Security. They get SSI checks, but they're not responsible enough with their own money, so they have conservators that like give them $20 every few days. But there's no follow through with this. These people have money. They could be renting somewhere. They could sign up for Section 8, but there's no follow through to help these people, guide them to being housed. And I think that really needs to be looked at, that there's got to be some way to transition these people, especially if they're already receiving benefits, to get the rest of what they need, which would be public housing, and, you know, help getting housed. So I would encourage you to do away with the blanket ban and the sleeping ban. Thank you.
Hi, all. Editing as I go here. My name's Kim. Thanks for letting me speak. I am going to be the one to call out the elephant in the living room tonight. This proposal was never announced to the bigger community. Most downtown businesses and neighbors had no idea this was even on the table until just a few days ago. It seemed to only be announced to Mr. Lane's supporters. And so as people came to know about it, they started writing in letters, and many of them couldn't be here tonight because it was such a short notice with their work and families. Personally, I don't understand how allowing street sleeping will prevent hypothermia, victimization, or death. I feel these amendments are a big step backwards for our community. Life on the streets has changed drastically in the last 30, 40 years that I've been here. I'm a social worker, and with the serious drug problems and violence, it's not safe for unhoused people or their neighbors. I've worked with many homeless folks, people with mental illness and chemical dependency, and have a deep connection to these folks and helping them get a better way of life. And I just don't feel it's compassionate to encourage people to sleep on the streets. We have numerous homeless shelters, sober living environments, housing programs, and outreach, and people often get victimized, especially young folks and mentally ill. The current trend, as you know, is to move people away from the streets. My idea is to ask police, law enforcement, and parks what they recommend, since they deal with this all the time. It's also an opportunity to do outreach, look for missing persons and warrant checks. And maybe all the folks that support this amendment might invite people into their homes or to camp in their neighborhoods. I just don't feel that loosening the camping ban is only going to hurt the community. So please show compassion to all of us on this one. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Keith McHenry, and I've been working with the homeless for 35 years or more, and I really am excited to hear so much community support for this change. And I thought Don Lane's presentation was really well thought out and really presented a lot of the issues in a really clear and important way. And I hope that you not only vote to remove sleep from the ordinance, but that you do add sleeping bags. I have to say a lot of local homeless people have come to me and mentioned that as something really important to them, and particularly during this time of such horrible rains and such cold. And it's just exciting that virtually no one spoke out against this change in the ordinance. And I think that there has been a lot of public outreach to try to get people to know that it was happening. And just to the last speaker, a number of us do actually invite homeless people to live with us, and they do live with us. And it's been really rewarding to get to know those homeless people that we've invited into our homes. And I hope that you, too, will have that opportunity to get to grow closer to many of the residents here and house them in your houses as well. Thank you so much.
Darrell Darling, a pastor in Santa Cruz 32 years ago, now bed and breakfast innkeeper. As I did when we were looking at the warming centers issue, I will today say thank you. My first word is thank you. And I'm speaking to you because it's not proper for me to turn my back on you and speak to the community at large. So I'm speaking to Santa Cruz community for all that has been done over all these years that we have had to deal with, and the homeless particularly, people without shelter have had to deal with their situations. The way that Santa Cruz has constructively moved forward, there are no magic wands. There is no one solution. This one alteration to the ordinance or two to the ordinance, I think, is constructive, moral, and I encourage you strongly to take it. It won't be a final answer. It won't be a panacea. Nothing is. It's another step forward, and many, many steps forward that this community has taken. Thank you.
I think that concludes our commentary. Robert, you spoke on this already.
No.
Not on this one?
No, I spoke previously.
Okay, sorry.
3 minutes.
Yep.
Okay, the reason I'm wearing a bathrobe, for those who don't know, is because we're talking about the sleeping ban, and it seems a kind of combination of grim satire that I do this. Some may know that Mayor Matthews has seriously cut back speaking time for the public, unprecedented in a legal change discussion, even more so when there's only one item on this evening agenda. Will any council move to restore the public's time? I was going to ask, but everybody's had their little 2 minutes that they had. Most everybody felt cut off. It's interesting that there was virtual unanimous support among the sleepers for these amendments. And yet, if you look at the material that's in the agenda packet, you'll find things are divided about 50-50 with massive opposition from some folks in the neighborhoods and so forth. Sanity around the sleeping ban issue has never been easy or acceptable. Trying to persuade those guided by bigotry, fear, or property value priorities is a pretty hopeless task, doubly so when homeless people are a political football transformed into a crime issue to boost aspiring law and order advocates to power. Councilmember Lane has laid out many arguments for striking sleep from the law. His arguments simply relate to the economic and legal well-being of the city. You know, federal lawsuits, funding cutoffs, unnecessary police expenses, the failure of the drive-them-out-of-town policy. He does not talk about the rights of the poor much. I mean, let's face it, if anyone on the council really cared about the rights of the poor, there'd be housing, campgrounds, accessible public restrooms at night, rent control, speculation taxes, and a boot in the butt for the feather bedding for consultants, cops, and costly developers. Huff has been fighting for years against the sleeping ban, and we support the changes, ultimately small as they are. And they are small. Lane goes to great length to reassure the paranoid prejudice that police will continue to have all the tools they need to harass the ragged, the wretched, the traveler, the hippie. And, of course, he's right. There will be no welcoming spots for homeless people if sleep is removed. Parks are closed at night. Green belts are patrolled by officers with ticket books and stay-away orders. All walk-in shelters are closed. The homeless lack of service center is gated, guarded, locked, ID checked. Parks are being fenced off. Ghoulish-minded politicians are rattling jugs of needles as they seek to drag the city back into the dark ages of the drug wars. I've got a longer speech. It was supposed to go for 5 minutes, but I was cut short by our mayor. This vitriolic worldview requires strong community action to restore basic civil rights to homeless people. I encourage those with conscience and caring to join activists at the Huff Table at Project Pollinate, noon, a week from Saturday, after next March 19th at San Lorenzo Park, because this is not going to do it. But Lane's proposal is the bare minimum. Thank you.
So I think that, in fact, does conclude the public comment, and my pledge to those who contacted me in advance was to try and give everyone the opportunity to speak. I think we've done that, and we still have time for discussion and action. So we're going to take a 5-minute break, and we'll be back following. Okay, we'll resume our meeting and turn to, I think, if there are any additional questions that we want to ask of our staff. We'll have a chance to do that and then get into discussion. So are there any questions that council members would like to follow up on, having heard the public commentary?
Questions for staff?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. David?
I have more of a comment that I'd like to make. And once you're done, if there are any questions, I mean, I think there were some issues that came up regarding the legalities, and I did see a chart that was done previously, but I'm comfortable. I don't have any additional questions right now.
Okay. I have something I'd like to ask. A number of the speakers did mention an opinion by DOJ about possible HUD funding, and I would like to know to what extent these have force of precedence, actual directives. I think our HUD funding has, HUD funding in general has been going down generally, but HUD has been pleased with our programs locally. So I'm wondering if staff can comment, and maybe that's two different people commenting, but about the legal and legislative issues and opinions that have been put out tonight.
I can comment on the DOJ letter of interest.
Okay.
I'm not familiar with the HUD funding issue.
Right.
So last year, in a case called Bell versus Boise, the Department of Justice submitted a letter of interest on behalf of plaintiffs who were challenging a camping ordinance adopted by the city of Boise, Idaho. And in it, the DOJ expressed the opinion that an ordinance that prohibits camping or sleeping out of doors for people who do not have a current legal place to sleep indoors would amount to a criminalization based on the status as homeless, and therefore would violate the prescription or the prohibition in the Eighth Amendment to the United States Constitution on laws that amount to cruel and unusual punishment. That argument has been made many times in cases challenging camping ordinances. And in fact, partly out of concern for that type of an argument is the reason that the City Council in 2010, I believe, modified the camping ordinance to allow as an affirmative defense if a person is on a shelter waiting list or if the armory is full, then a camping citation that's issued for that person will be dismissed. So that was partly a reaction to concerns raised about that argument. But I would just point out that in 1995, the Department of Justice submitted a letter of interest making essentially the same argument to the California Supreme Court in another case involving the city of Santa Ana's camping ordinance. And in that case, the California Supreme Court rejected the Eighth Amendment challenge on the basis of criminalizing a person because of their status. And so the law in the state of California, as expressed by the California Supreme Court, is still the law that was established in the Tobe case, which is called, it was called Tobe versus the city of Santa Ana. And that has not been overturned by any subsequent court decision. So, so I think the way I look at the DOJ's letter of interest, and I know some cities have decided to at least temporarily suspend enforcement of their camping ordinances while they analyze that issue. I think it is something that the city needs to be concerned about, and I'm concerned about it. But I don't believe that the fact that the DOJ has taken a position on a, an item as persuasive as that, as it might be amounts to a legal precedent that binds the city council to adopt that argument or to modify its ordinance merely because the DOJ has expressed an opinion on that issue.
Any other questions?
Just, oh. I would just finally point out that the legal landscape involving camping ordinances and these issues as communities throughout the country have been grappling with them is always in a state of flux. Mm-hmm. So things change. You know, sometimes a court with you know, different judges or justices take a look, will take a look at the same issue, you know, in a different time frame and come back with a different decision. So I'm not here to proclaim that the existing camping ordinance is now and forevermore immune from a potential legal challenge, but currently it is consistent with the state of case law in California as I read it.
Okay. Martine, did you want to add something?
Did you? I can answer the question about the HUD funding.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And as Councilmember Lane noted, HUD has expressed concerns regarding and the inclusion of policies that criminalize homelessness, as he stated from Tony Gardner, the consultant that helps the county and the cities with their applications. Now, you have to keep in mind, as kind of Tony alluded to, that the kinds of ordinances that are out there vary by jurisdictions considerably. And, you know, some are stricter than others. And so, you know, that's taken into account. You know, for example, some have alternatives, like ours, for example, provides alternative places for camping. It also provides for tickets to be dismissed if the shelters are full. So if a shelter's full and somebody gets a ticket for sleeping, that ticket can be dismissed. So nonetheless, when asked about specifically this question of would it affect funding specifically related to the city's application, because there's a whole rating process of points that's made, Tony's response that he gave to us via email was that he didn't think it would have an impact on funding, largely based because the points assigned are so small to this factor and because we do tend to rate high on the others, so he didn't think that it would, at least with the future application.
Okay. Thank you. Rochelle?
I'd like to ask a question about that. If I also understand correctly, the type of HUD grant that we're talking about for housing programs, this is actually the one we're talking about is more related to the county applying for it, or isn't it? That's what I thought was the case, the $2 million annually that goes to HAP?
It's the county and the cities jointly do that application.
Right. So it's not just the city of Santa Cruz by itself applying for this.
Correct.
That's what I thought. And then it's 2 points out of 200, right?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Other questions? I do have another question. It's probably of someone from PD, and that has to do with enforcement. I know that Don presented a list of ordinances currently on the books that wouldn't change. like littering, defecation, et cetera, but, and I forget the others, but most of those involve having to witness, the officer has to witness that in process, like the littering being done, et cetera, in order to issue a citation. So I just wonder if you could talk, relatively speaking, about enforcement issues for what's on the books.
Sure. So with regard to the violations that Councilmember Lane indicated were on the books, urinating in public, defecating in public, the other infraction violations of the municipal code. In California, the only time that a police officer can make an arrest based upon probable cause when they don't actually see the violation occur is when a felony crime has been committed. In the case of the types of crimes we're talking about this evening, they're all infraction crimes, which means that the officer either has to be present to witness the activity as it's taking place, or they have to have a complaining witness who witnesses the activity and then is willing to sign a private person's arrest so the officer can effectively make the arrest, which would involve issuing a citation.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
Any other comments, questions? Then we bring it back for discussion and action. David?
I'd like to start with a comment. First of all, thanks, Dawn, for, you know, taking the time to bring this forward. I mean, I want to agree with some of the testimony we heard tonight that, in my opinion, and I agree, this is absolutely not a criminal justice issue. And we've been grappling with this issue on the Public Safety Committee in a lot of our deliberations. However, as a city, it's one of the few tools we have to address some of the social services issues that face our town. Aside from working with the county to influence policy, which we've done, to help increase funding for drug and alcohol rehabilitation, for mental health services, we are relying on our public safety resources to address this. And for me, that's an unfortunate situation. I think that the police have been put in a position to address the social services matter, and we do need to continue to take a different approach. As a city, we've funded the PACT program to provide wraparound services, and as a city, we're really interested in looking how we engage our county partners in addressing these matters. In my opinion, I respectfully mean this, I don't think that this provides the type of solution that leads to lasting change, and I think that it's one that I, on its face, really can't support because it really does not provide the types of solutions that lead to that lasting change. And I know it's a difficult position to come to because I think this is dealing with people's lives. But actually, I would like to see us kind of help work with the county to affect the change in a more lasting way than just kind of taking these ordinances we have rather than helping to influence policy that takes us to a different place.